from the Vanderbilt University Center for Science Outreach, and I want to thank you for downloading this episode of Snacks for the Brain. We're truly grateful for your interest in what we're doing to bring the joy of research and discovery to K-12 students and teachers the whole world over. If you're not in either of these categories, maybe you're just an interesting person who's interested in the world. In any case, welcome. Bi-weekly or so, we'll share some fun, independent, pod-safe music, we'll interview some working research scientists, students, or leading proponents of educational change, and we'll toss in an educational sound-seeing tour or computer tip.
If it's good for you, we'll be right here.
At blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4TheB and at the CSO website at scienceoutreach.org, sharing good brain munchies with you. So listen up, let's get right down to it with episode number
75
of Snacks for the Brain.
Snacks for the Brain.
Hey y'all, welcome to this episode of Snacks for the Brain. The featured snack this episode is audio from a talk I gave to Vanderbilt University faculty and staff by invitation from the Digital VU series from the Vanderbilt News and Media Department. The title of this offering was Engaging Podcast Content, and it features a slideshow that I put up at SlideShare. So if you have a mind, you can visit blogs.vanderbilt.edu/S4TheB and follow along with the slideshow whilst you listen. The music this time is a treat, at least for me, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. It's two songs delivered to me recently from a dear friend who recorded them in December of 1975 at a venue called the Bread Factory in Anchorage, Alaska. Jeff sat out front with a boombox, and what you hear is what he heard. Two guys with aggressive acoustic guitar styles and pretty darn good, well-practiced harmonies. You'll also hear folks chatting over dinner in the small vegetarian restaurant. This will be Scott and Scott. This is Scott Miller, my dear friend, and Juno, who's still playing music up there. And we're doing a couple of covers this time. The songs are from Aztec Two-Step and John Prine. I don't know the first folks personally, but I do know John, and I hope he'll forgive my cover of his Rocky Mountain Time. Here it is, Scott and Scott from December 1975.
Tomorrow
back again. Station's empty, the train keeps rolling on. Reached in my pocket, waited for dawn, and the clock played the drums.
That was Scott and Scott. That was me and my buddy Scott Miller. Check out the website for Scott H. Miller's CD, Letters to Myself. Listen, I'll follow the podcasting session right after this with Scott and Scott's cover of Highway Song by Aztec Two-Step. Rex Fowler and Neil Shulman took their duo's name from a Lawrence Ferlinghetti poem, and we definitely found much inspiration from their tight harmonies and beautiful, thought-provoking lyrics. If you like the song, please visit AztecTwoStep.com and buy some of their music. Unlike Scott and Scott, they're both still going strong together with their music. I'll not say goodbye after this that song. I'll just say it now. See ya! Thanks for joining us for episode number 70.
We'll talk about the full gadget in a minute. Darn, I missed the start of it. Because I want to podcast this session a little bit, too. So when it comes time for you to talk loud. Use your classroom voice. I really believe that that's what will keep audio podcasting alive. I started getting interested in audio podcasting. I have all sorts of listservs going on, and since I'm a technologist and I'm supposed to be looking at what's happening in technology, I sort of really keep up with what's developing. And when podcasts started happening, Adam Curry, who's a former VJ for MTV, I see a few people in this room who might remember him. He was a shaggy, blonde-haired guy. Is credited, controversially, with creating the concept of a podcast. Because he wanted to create an entertaining show that could be downloaded and listened to anytime. And before he started doing that, a few people were doing similar things, but he sort of brought it into the mainstream with his podcast. Then other people started picking it up. Richard Vobes, I'll share a little bit of his podcast too, is a Britisher who does kind of an old-timey radio show full of segments, one on beer, one on, he does sound seeing tours where he'll go out and show parts of England, and he does all kinds of discussions and interviews. He's created a podcast every day since I discovered podcasts. It's called the Richard Vobes Radio Show, and it's at Vobes.com. I may have that in the links too, but you might want to write that one down. Very entertaining. I mean, if you're taking a long trip, you could do a lot worse than to load up your iPod with some Vobes shows, because he's a funny, funny guy, and he's got some interesting things to say. So you need a recent podcast, you need an audience, which you may need to build. Might come later. You might have a captive audience. You might have a classroom full of kids. You need a computer and a microphone. I use a headset, which is very handy for all kinds of things, including Second Life, if anybody decides to get into that, because there's a voice feature in Second Life. And you need somewhere to store and deliver your podcast. So mine are stored. I could use the university school web server. I could use a web server at, and I do in fact use the web server at Vanderbilt, and I don't have access to that web server. What I do is I put my podcasts up on the USN web server, and they're pulled over to Vandy by my tech guy at the Center for Science Outreach, just almost automatically. He does it manually, but and that's just a security issue. They don't want to give me full access to the Vandy server for some reason. But you need to know, you need to have somewhere to store it where people can get to it. You can pay $10 a month and get a virtual server at a number of services like oneandone.com and GoDaddy and those places where you can store your podcasts. Libsyn is another one. So, and then you need a software for recording and post-production. Like movies, a lot of people don't realize how much post-production time goes into creating a decent podcast. I think mine's kind of middle of the road, kind of okay. I don't think the audio quality is exactly what it should be, but it's fun, so it's sort of get past that. If you're a real audiophile, you will get into this part of the business very, very energetically. I started using a Cool Edit Pro, which is an old audio software, which is fairly expensive. I was able to get my late father-in-law, who was Howard Herod of the Divinity School, to purchase it for me to make my CD out of my cassette tapes years and years and years ago. And that was bought by Adobe and turned into Adobe Audition. And I used that for years up until about 3 months ago, 2 months ago, when an upgrade for Adobe CS3 disabled my Audition, and I don't have the source file, the original installation file. So now I'm using two different programs from Adobe. I'm using Adobe Sound Booth and Adobe Premiere Pro to mix the multi-tracks. So you can also do video in Premiere Pro. I think Vanderbilt has a good license for Adobe CS3. I think it's quite available to Vanderbilt people for less expensive than normal purchase. You might check that out. It's now CS4, and I'm not sure if Vanderbilt's upgraded it or not. Anybody know that? You don't have to use that. You can use something called Audacity, which is free. And it has very much of the functionality of these high-end things. It's just, I love that F word. I love the free. So Audacity is used in high schools and in schools all over the country for people who are creating podcasts for kids or by kids as early as third grade or first grade. So you need that stuff. So I mentioned those two. There's Adobe, and there's all kinds of things in between. You know, find yourself a sound manipulation software that you're comfortable with and start playing with it. You know, I'm going to tell you guys the same thing that I tell my first graders, well, maybe third graders, is to you know, I do what's called guided discovery in my computer lab. I'll introduce a couple of tools to a new platform and give them a real sort of a project. Like in PowerPoint, for example, I'll show them how to open the file, show them how to open the program, I'll show them how to do a new slide, and maybe not even do a slide background, but how to insert a text box, how to insert a picture, and I'll set them loose on a project called All About Me. And they've got to have a title slide, four regular slides, and a source citation slide if they've gotten pictures from somewhere. So I mean, I get them started kind of early, but I give them something meaningful to do. And if you get into this and like it, you will learn how to do it. You can't. That's about all I have to say about that. Okay, you also need an RSS feed, which publishes your podcast to the internet or to iTunes or to both. We're just looking at my feed here earlier. This is my feed that goes to iTunes, and every time I publish in my server a new show, which is basically just an MP3 file. It's a multi-track file that's distilled down into a one-track file that is in stereo. And when I publish it to that, or when my guy pulls it over and publishes it in the server folder at IT at Vanderbilt, it automatically goes out to iTunes. And you will see, like here's, I was talking about the workshops I did last summer, here's the one I did on that. And as soon as it got posted, it was available at iTunes. And at iTunes, anybody here subscribed to podcasts already? A couple? What do you listen to?
Whatever my children download for me.
that's a friend of mine in New York who teaches at the Harlem Storefront School. His big advice for adult learners is to ask someone younger. So what do you listen to?
All kinds of different stuff. Like I do a Spanish language thing. And then I'm a musician as well. So
there's a lot of good music
out
there.
There's
a lot of good music out there. There was a guy early on, and I'm not sure this podcast is still going on, but every time he would go to he had a podcast called The Daily Download, and he recorded it in his bathroom every day. So as he was having his, he talked, and it became very, very popular to the point at which he picked up a Sirius XM contract to continue his show, The Daily Download. So you can get, it's Alice's restaurant out there, you can get pretty much anything you want. And then all anybody has to do is go to their own computer and subscribe to a podcast. If they're at the iTunes store, you can click a subscribe button. Now that's a misleading term, because those of us who remember subscription magazines when we actually read print, we had to pay for those. When you subscribe to a podcast, you don't have to pay anything. Subscribing means that you're putting your RSS feed into your own computer so that you'll have a list of your subscribed podcasts, and whenever you go to iTunes and open it up, am I phrasing that right? Whenever you go to iTunes and open up iTunes will go out and look and see if there's a new Snacks for the Brain, or a new Adobe Creative Suite video podcast, or a new podcast by my friend in Alaska, or any of these others that I subscribe to.
The podcast that I do here at the school, I have to basically kind of hand code the XML document that is the RSS.
Do you do that every time?
What's that?
Do you do that every time?
I do, and so, but it sounds like you have some way of like automating. How does that work?
You know what? I'll have to ask Jeff, because I think Jeff is doing that for me.
Okay.
And it may be that he has to hand code it every time.
Because I know for iTunes, there's a tag for like the description of the podcast, the time.
They have a template for their RSS that you better follow or you're going to lose it. So, and that in itself is kind of arcane knowledge that you sort of have to figure out yourself or find somebody who can help you.
But I would love if there was a way to like automate that.
I've got a bunch of cards here. Feel free to contact. I'm gonna just leave them by the door. Grab them on the way out. If you guys have any questions anytime, feel free. I've got cards from all my three jobs here, so I'll just put them up here. Feel free, if you'll email me, I'll follow up on that for you.
Okay.
So these are the ones that are showing up, and David Warlick has become a friend of mine. Over the years, has he done anything recently? Well, 10-3, he's got an interview with, let's just listen to a little bit of his to see about, to get maybe some notions of format. He's got a stock intro, I think it's some of his music.
Mumbai, India. something. Right? And we've been having this conversation about what you're doing in your library. And I've been holding off until we all got to breakfast to ask you to describe your virtual library. And I'll mention right now that one thing that's come out is that your students help you design the virtual library, which I think is very appropriate and unusual. So tell us about the virtual library. What does it look like?
Okay, we're not going to listen about the virtual library. This is the kind of thing that David does. He goes to conferences, and he's on the road 300 days a year. He makes his living consulting and advocating for the future, for change in the future of education. He's one of these guys who'll get, you know, $5,000 for a keynote at a big conference. And at the same time, he's very down to earth. And he started podcasting. He was one of my inspirations. Started podcasting long ago. Right now, he's at an EduBloggerCon. Similar to the one that I saw him, I was able to spend a little time with him where was I? San Antonio, this past summer. It's a pre-conference, unconference, if you're familiar with that term, where all the attendees sort of suggest sessions, and then it's voted on when you get there, and it's put together really quickly. But it was one of the most stunning conferences I've ever been. Too, and he's in Singapore, I guess. Shanghai? What do you say? He's in Shanghai at one of those conferences. So he takes advantage of the opportunity to record, and he's using something. This is my Dell Axum. It's a mini PC, and basically all I use it for. Hello, all I use it for is recording podcasts. It's about to go on me, so I'm going to have to get some other tool, but that's kind of exciting. I get a new toy. You can use, for your portable work, an iPod with a plug-in microphone. That's what David's using, I believe. He changes up. He sort of plays with different tools. I got them to buy at USN a Marantz 600, which is about a... I want to say a $2,500 box that's about this big. It's smaller than the laptop, but it's just a digital sound recorder. And it does stunning work. and I wish I could carry that around with me all the time. And some people do. That's what Scott used. In fact, when I was shopping tools for USN, I consulted with Scott and he said to get that. So we did. And we use it to record presentations by alumni and special events and that kind of thing at USN.
What's it called again?
It's a Marantz 600. Let me Google it real quick and I'll show you on the other screen. Marantz. It's an old name and sound, right? Anybody who might be an audiophile. VC600, LCD projector, lamp, digital audio. There we go. 620, that's what it is. And it looks like they've got some less expensive ones. Let me show you real quick. Oh, this is a smaller type unit. That's the one we have, a solid state recorder. The price has gone way down. This is at buy.com, which is a great place to buy hardware. That's pretty much what it looks like. So it's a $700 unit now. A lot of that stuff's coming down. So
how big is that?
That's a good tool. And it comes with microphones that you can separate and condenser mics. They're powered mics, so you have to pretty much have to plug it in. It's a great little unit.
What was yours called?
This is a Dell Axum. It's just a pocket PC. Anything you can record on and upload digitally. I also have an Olympus. Well, I can't lay my hands on it right now, but it's a little pen-shaped thing, but it's a little thicker. It looks like a little microphone itself. And those things are only about $70. And you can do some fairly good quality stuff there. And then clean it up in post-production. Yeah. I wanted to show you... Well, let's go back to my PowerPoint and make sure I'm on track here. Not that it matters. Okay. Feedburner.com is a good place to set up a feed. And you can do that. You can set up your own feed that way, by the way. Just investigate that. The directions are pretty straightforward there. You go and you put your... create a blog for your show notes, and anytime you upload a music file to it, Feedburner will send it out, but not necessarily to iTunes. You have to jump through some hoops to make a Feedburner work. So, remote recording device, good. iPod with a Belkin mic. Olympus, I just told you about, that's the little thing. Okay, here's the cool part. Magnatune.com and the PodSafe Music Network. And those links are in there. Oops, I'm not showing you right. It's always something. Give me that. It's thinking. There we go. The links are in the SlideShare PowerPoint. So, magnatune.com is just that. If you go to magnatune.com, it's a new marketing venture. I just saw Paul Worley the other night at Arclectic, who's a big honcho in the country music business. I said, well, how's music? And he said, how's business? And he said, you know, it's been catastrophic in the music business. And so people are trying to figure out new models of income producing. And the man who created magnatune.com lets you go and pick a really nice quality album and pay whatever you want to pay for it. If you're a podcaster, you can send him a link to information about your podcast. You know, I sent him my blog. You want to have a blog for show notes. And I think I get to that later, and I may not get to it today. But you want to have some way to record, like I do at my. Oh, I don't have the browser up here. Like I do at the Vanderbilt. blogs.vanderbilt.edu/s4thev. It's a WordPress blog, and I do a running commentary about what's in the podcast to sort of tease people into downloading it and listening to it. But it also serves as a repository for any kind of video that I'd like to put up. So if you have a podcast and can verify that, they will give you a bogus credit card number where you can go and get anything you want for free. There's that F word again. But even so, every once in a while I buy a CD if I'm not going to really use it, because they've got some great classical music there. And classical music is always good for working behind the voice. And they've got some great world music. Something different with some percussion. You know, you can mix up the sounds behind your voice while you're talking. You might want to have your own podcast aggregator, and I just use aggregator. Did I say aggregator? I meant aggregator. You want to, which is just iTunes is what I use, but there's some other solutions out there: Lemon Juice, iPodRx, and there's a list linked to there. I don't know why anybody would not use iTunes, but you may just hate Apple. I don't know. But if you do, there are other options for aggregators for podcasts. And then fun tools, anything. There are some services to help you podcast, and I haven't clicked these links very lately, but this one is David Warlick's. Let's do this and see if it opens up my... David Warlick has one for education podcasts. So that once you have your podcast going, got a wacky resolution error. These are all educational podcasts, and I should change my resolution, but that's okay. Oh, let's do this. Let's just do this.
Hello.
He's going to break it down into topics, and if you'll notice, I always look for my name here. Snacks for the Brain is there. once you have your podcast, you want to get it out to as many people in as many different ways as you can. So that's another sort of side business for you, promoting your podcast. It's all about getting it in front of people. If you're doing it, you think it's worth listening to. And if it's worth listening to, nobody's going to listen to it unless you let them know it's there. So there are all kinds of marketing techniques that you can do. And I've stumbled across all of this. I mean, I haven't taken any classes in podcasting except for one from Apple, which I didn't use because I'm a PC guy. But I did learn some things from that. So if you click Snacks for the Brain here, because I have... Oh, it looks like my feed's not working for him here. The last one he's got is 70... Oh, that is my last one, isn't it? No, I've got 76. That's okay. Yeah, it is. That's my last one. Sorry, my numbers are off because I have an introduction or two. So if you go here, you can listen to it here. What else we have? Oreo is another place where you can go. Oh, that's the wrong one. That's interesting. Looks like Nabisco got hacked off and bought the I'll have to change that link. Let's see if let me do something real quick. Oreo podcasting. Podfeed. Yeah, it looks like they maybe had them take it down. Interesting.
So what do you have to do to get your keyword in Google search to pop up your...
The clean way to do it is to get a whole bunch of different places to link to it. Oh well. So that's a worthless link in the... See what this does. GCast is another good solution. You can phone in your podcast at GCast, and that's run by the GarageBand people. Ooh, Macintosh. How many Macintosh people do we have? Okay, don't want to leave you out. GCast at GarageBand.com is a good solution too. Here's podcasting made easy. If you go, just check these places out and see if any of them, you know, speak to you. If they, you know, hit a chord. GCast is cool because you can use your telephone to upload audio. My problem is my telephone's not strong enough audio source to do good quality pretty much anything unless I'm at a car accident or something that, you know, there's no other alternative. You normally want to record something as high quality as you can. It's like picture taking. You want to record it as well as you can so that, you know, if anything, you're downsizing it instead of upsizing it. But you can create your podcast for free here at GCast. And I'm going to skip through this because we're going to run out of time. Here's a page in the slideshow, in the PowerPoint, about places you can promote your podcast. I do a lot of work in Second Life, and I work mainly with ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education, and I created, because I'm interested in podcasts, I created a podcast hut on ISTE Island where you can... There's me again. Does it look like me? No. I couldn't buy this hair, so I had to buy other hair. Everything in this building is clickable and interactive, and everything in this building, and this is a snapshot inside Second Life, a visitor to this building can click and get tips and tricks on podcasting, can get a list of links of Second Life podcasts, can listen to a podcast, which is the Res Ed podcast, which is a really good one. If you're interested in education and virtual environments, reseded.org, and I think I have that in the list too, we'll look. Or you might not want to promote it at all. If you're doing it just for your students, you know, skip that step. You don't have to become a superstar. You know, I'm not a superstar, but I just got invited and was just down in New Orleans last week to speak to Internet 2 fall meeting, and I went sort of cloak and dagger as a representative of Fandy on the Internet 2 commission, the Internet 2 working group, and I served on a panel about virtual worlds. Why? Because people know my name in that field. You don't have to do that. You know, I'm getting some travel opportunities and I'm meeting a lot of really nice people who are also interested in virtual environments for teaching and learning. One of my co-panelists is the Director of Innovative Technologies at the Kauffman Foundation, which gives out a lot of money. So I'm really glad to have met her, because I'm working with a whole bunch of people who'd like to see. We've already proven in certain works that it's the efficacy for virtual environments and learning, teaching and learning, is really there. The research just hasn't come in to completely support it yet, but we're getting research now. She and her slide presentation had a graph, and I shared it on my blog a couple of weeks ago, or last week, of the number of graduates in Bachelor of Sciences who graduated in the United States every year. It's about 65,000 in science, engineering, math, technology. And so that's down here at the bottom of the graph. And then the number of users of World of Warcraft is up in the 10 millions. And she says that her foundation, which is dedicated to education, is looking at gaming platforms because of the scope of its of their reach. That's a staggering thing right there. You know, RuneScape, you know, here's the graph. I wish I had the graph to show you. Maybe I can find it. RuneScape is down here at about 1.5 million users, and they're all little kids. The trick is to create a valid enough gaming experience with valid learning experience in it, too. And we'll see how that goes. I've got a bunch of resources. Got a bunch of resources at the end of this PowerPoint, and at the very end of the PowerPoint is my delicious listing. Anybody ever use that? It's a what do we call it? A link sharing. What is it? Yeah, social bookmarking. Yeah. Thanks. I knew that. So it's a social bookmarking application where you can give people a link and show you, and you can share. I don't think I hot linked that. I didn't. But the link is there. What can I show you? Anybody have any questions now? Maybe we'll get out of here soon. I know everybody's tired. I do want to change it. I changed the name. I do want to show you. Let me show you while you're thinking. In my podcasts here, this is one if you're interested in Alaska at all and having lived there a while. See if we can get that to play.
Last year I put out in our school, we have connections, which is a 30-minute period.
Well, that's David again. Hang on.
Kids in the high school and the middle school could join a club.
There we go. This is the guy who started with audio podcasting and did that for a couple of years, and he got a contract Sirius XM Radio and started building sponsorship.
Welcome back to the show. Today we're continuing our journey on a 35-mile boat ride from Wrangell through the protected waters of the Eastern Passage. Our final destination is the Anhan Bear Observatory. Our guide and a good friend of mine, Jim Leslie, has been telling me about this place for years, and we're finally here. The Inside Passage is one of the gems of Alaska. And this place is no exception.
Anybody ever do that trip? I have too. I walked
on.
Slept
on the deck. And I've been waiting for this for a while. And can you tell us what you're doing or what's ahead of us here with Alaska Waters?
Well, I've been kind of anxious to get you down here because you're going to be amazed today. This is an opportunity to see black bears and brown bears in the same place at the same time. Very rare.
That is rare.
Occurrence. Only a few places where you can see that in Alaska. We're going to be walking in about a half a mile on the trail here. Very likely going to meet bears on the trail. There's also lots of bald eagles in here and harbor seals in the lagoon. And we'll have a little talk about how this place was used by the Tlingits.
Notice he's got a high-powered rifle on his shoulder.
Half mile walk in.
I've had a few of those myself, a few bear encounters myself. That's another story, though.
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
If you mentioned in your presentation posting your podcasts on a web service instead of using a local client download like iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, say you, because you don't want to rely on everybody, wherever they may access your podcast, having iTunes, say it's not their computer,
right, and
have it on there. If you post it on the web service, can you also, if somebody were to try and find it on iTunes, would it be available there as well?
You know, that's, I have to say, that's a good question. You know, if you know what's coming next, is that I don't know. But I think that it's possible.
Okay.
I mean, I would assume that it's possible. I also would suggest that since you guys are here at Vanderbilt, that ITS would be a great resource for you. I mean, who actually works here in ITS? Nobody? They're very helpful and receptive. And Melanie Moran, who's in the news department here at Vanderbilt, can bridge that gap for you, I think. I don't know that.
Okay. So I think we would rely on mostly video.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen?
We'd be trying to. I don't know if you've worked with Camtasia before, but it's.
I have.
It'd be a lot like working with that, except we'd be. We would publish Camtasia files, or files that have been created in Camtasia as a Windows media file, to a media streaming media server.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure if this is going to be any more enhanced or efficient or whatever.
We have firewall issues.
That's always the ticket, I think. I wonder if Ustream has streams in here. Do you know about Ustream TV?
If you use Site Mason, we post our blogs with the announcement of our blogs and the link to their blog. Podcast. We post our podcast
on a blog
link on the Site Mason tool that takes care of feeding it to iTunes as well. I think there's probably some setup there. But that may be something you need to look at as well.
Okay. Because this would strictly be, I mean, I don't know how many people work in the medical center here, but educating the masses is one of the biggest challenges we have. At this, you know, barring bringing everybody to a classroom such as this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting so inundated with needs to educate, other than the one time a year when we bring in all the new clinicians. We need an ability to reach out to them like this. And so a virtual room, virtual classroom, video educational files seems like just the only way to really to go at this point. Today.
You might look at services like Ustream TV.
My streams are several decades old.
Tonight.
Snacks for the Brain is brought to you by the fine folks at the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach, connecting working research scientists with K-12 students worldwide. Check out the website at scienceoutreach.org.